Well, hello there, everybody. From the deck just outside the offices of Walsh and Dormat in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, welcome to day one of the TBTL Summer Special Programs. It's a Monday edition of the show, episode 2689 in a collector series. My name's Luke Burbank. I am your host. Sitting right over there is the longest-running Cobro of the show, Mr. Andrew Walsh, Esquire. Hello, sir.
Hello. So you call this a deck. You know, this is a point of contention, a small point of contention between my girlfriend and myself. Genevieve calls this a roof deck. I call it a roof that we use as a deck.
I call it more of a groof.
It's more of a roof.
You know, this is a theater of the mind. And so if the listeners imagine like a beautiful, glistening Brazilian hardwood Ipe deck that's just looking over like, you know, an infinity pool and then a sunset in the background.
What about the nail salon next door? Is that there in this scenario?
We're going to get to that in episode two or maybe three. Here's what we're going to be doing for the next couple of weeks. We're, of course, recording some special stuff so that we can take a little break. And Andrew, you had this idea for the theme of these summer shows to be about cars that we've owned at one time or another. And so we're going to talk about that. And, well, it turns out we have a good friend of the program who helps us out with these special shows each season. And he is, in fact, his nickname is because of a car he owned at one time. It was a Camaro. He is Camaro Kev from the Stack of Dimes podcast. Welcome to the roof.
Gentlemen, thank you. I look forward to this whenever you have these special seasonal. Typically, it's around Christmas or whatever. But it's beautiful out. Summer in Seattle. We got this beautiful, exquisite deck here.
So beautiful.
Again, is this bamboo? What is this?
It's a type of bamboo.
I love the built-ins, the built-in bar and everything. And it's very, it feels like I'm in Bali.
Yeah, well, I think you're embarrassing me now. You're talking up so much. But thank you. We did put a lot of work into it.
But no, seriously, thank you guys.
This
I love doing this.
You're the reason I had the idea, because we knew we were going to do 2 weeks of shows with you. And I was like, well, the guy's name is Camaro Kev. And then I started thinking, oh, yeah, like, that's good. Like, everybody's got a story, I feel like, about their first car, or at least maybe their first series of cars. You know, we drive beaters, how we got them. Like, I just feel like any person's first car is probably contains a multitude of stories.
For me, it would be my first car and then all of the cars up until two cars ago.
Right. And then back to your truck, which actually you probably could tell some stories about the truck you drive around.
Oh, yeah,
now,
you're right.
Right.
I guess it would be the last three cars I acquired were basically normal transactions where I actually had the money for the vehicle, or at least the down payment for the vehicle.
There was no hot wiring.
There was no lying to any authorities at the state or federal level. More on that coming up, too. But before that, every single car that I acquired was some sort of a situation. Either I was trying to scam the person, they were trying to scam me, we were collectively trying to scam Bank of America. I mean, there's just a lot to talk about.
Salvage title here and there. You don't know.
Walsh, I know that you had a minivan we're going to hear about, which was, it wasn't just a minivan. But it was basically a rolling furniture showroom in that the contents of the van became part of your actual living domicile.
Right. That's right.
And then, of course, we have Camaro Kev's Camaro, which we'll get to that on that particular episode. But I mean, that's one of two vehicles you've owned, which gets into a much more interesting conversation about how well you take care of your vehicles.
I mean, I guess, you know, I change the oil from time to time and run a vacuum through it, but, you know, if something's broken, I usually fix it, so I don't know.
You fix it yourself?
No. I mean, maybe, you know, little things, but, you know, if it's something big, I'll get it done.
Anything that needs to be whacked with a stick in the parking lot of a Shucks,
right.
you can do that.
That's definitely the Camaro there.
Is that foreshadowing?
But, so, you know what, you get a Haynes or a Chilton manual, and most of that stuff can be done on your own.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like our father's generation, even dads that aren't good at working on cars are better at working on cars than we
absolutely
are. Like, if you were to ask my dad, he'd go, I don't really know what I'm doing, but then he would know everything.
Absolutely.
About,
next thing you know, he's rebuilt a carburetor
right
in front of you.
Exactly. So I just, I think that art has been lost. Although it's necessarily our generation's fault, because cars are more and more complicated.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's like the space car that we have is basically a friggin' laptop. you know?
Yeah, like, you have to have the proper software to, like, dial into it and diagnose it.
We were having problems with it. It felt like the transmission was being weird. And
kind of slipping, that feeling where it just kind of – it was not –
Yeah, it was revving. It was just being odd, and we
probably
took it
a firmware update.
That's exactly what it was. We took it in, and the guy said, "Oh yeah, well you need the update." And he literally hooked a computer up to it and updated the transmission.
You can still work on your own cars, but you need one of those anonymous masks, and you have to hack into the mainframe. Yeah.
So I'm going to kick things off here, and again, I've got in front of me a list of some of my cars that I became the owner of over the years, and like I said, I feel like it's variations on a theme. So I'm trying to figure out where exactly to start. And, I mean, how about I'll list the car and you guys tell me which one. The very first car I had was a Honda Civic. That was actually a pretty straightforward
transaction. What color was that one?
Shit brown. Like shit. Poop emoji brown.
They later changed the name, I believe, right? To avocado brown?
Or, yes, yeah, okay. That's right. But that one, I have to be honest with you, the only interesting thing about that was I didn't know how to drive a stick shift, and it was a stick shift, and I was so excited about it that I drove it home, not really knowing how to drive a stick shift.
Oh, had you ever – I mean, somebody must have taught you the basics.
I had operated – yes. I had been one time when I was camping in Wenatchee, my friend Matt Smith had kind of taught me how to drive his Honda that was also a 5-speed. So – or maybe it was a 4-speed. I don't know. But it's like I had at one time in my life operated a stick shift. For a brief period. But this is how my brain works. I get so excited about things that, like, I didn't want to wait for my dad to come and, like, get the car and drive it home. I was like, I can do it. So I think I drove it from the U District to Green Lake in, like, second.
Okay.
You know?
So and that's about a 2-mile drive or something on surface streets.
Yeah, 2 or 3.
So that's not too bad.
That is classic Luke, though, that you will figure it out. You're like, I'll get it, and I'll deal with it.
Oh, I destroyed the engine. It was never the same. No, it got home okay-ish. But anyway,
Let me just ask you this though. My only question about that is, so how old were you when you got your first car, and how old was the car?
The car was a 1980,
and you would have gotten this in about 90.
I got this. I got this after. So I turned 16 in May of 1993.
Okay,
and I that summer I worked at Dick's Drive-In, and I was I lived obviously with my parents. I didn't have a lot of overhead. So I would just save these checks I would get from Dick's because I worked full time and I didn't know what to spend the money on. And at the end of the summer, after buying all of the fitted hats I could think of at the Pro Image, I was like, I'm out of things.
I already got turned forward the clock, Dave.
You know,
hats.
Right? So I hope in the future people slide when they're coming home. But anyway, that's an extremely specific D. Gordon reference that won't make sense. Barely makes sense now, let alone in a month.
Got to say, very prescient that turn 4 of the clock night.
So I had, I think I maybe had $500, $600 or something.
So you had a car in high school, though.
I had a car. Well, okay, maybe there is more to this story. So I got this car because I did have some money left over from my Dick's drive-in work. I think I had whatever it was, $400 or $500. This car was $350. Saw it advertised in the paper. It was nothing fancy, but it sure seemed like a magical vehicle to me, even though it was just your standard manual Honda from the early 80s.
The reason I ask is because I didn't have a car in high school. Did you, Andrew?
And I think, Luke, you and I are very different in this way. Like, I didn't even bother getting my license until I was 18, I think.
Oh,
I think I was still in high school, but I think it was senior year. Maybe I was 17. But, like, I had a bunch of friends who all were, like, a year older than me. So they just drove everywhere, and they liked driving. I mean, I wonder, like, Luke, you drive my ass around all the time. So
that was totally a thing, though. Like, there's guys in high school that if they got a car, all they wanted to have is an excuse to drive it.
Sure. I mean, between Sean and Misty and Kristen, like, all of my friends, like, so many of them, David, they were all a year older than me. So they just drove me around all the time. So I didn't feel this need. Like, I wasn't homebound without a car. I was always out anyway, and I was kind of lazy about it. So anyway, I did end up getting one in high school, but I think I was 17 when I got it.
Because I just drove my parents' cars throughout high school. And
well, right. I got my license the day I turned 16.
Wow.
That was a big thing.
So you were driving at 15 with your learner's permit?
15 and a half.
Wow.
That was the same
15
way.
15 and a half.
I took the last, again, this was not interesting then, and it's less interesting now, but this is just a view into my kind of my scheming brain, okay? So I am a 15-and-a-half-year-old or whatever, and you have to take driver's ed in Seattle Public School District to get your license, I think, before you're 18. That was the rule back then. You had to either take it from the school or you had to take it from a private.
Absolutely.
You had to have driver's ed training. You couldn't just go take the test. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that my parents were never going to spring for one of those private driving schools.
And my parents did. I went to defensive driving school.
Is that where you learned archers and darters?
Chargers and snipers.
Chargers and snipers.
We can get into that later. Go ahead.
So it's the summertime, and I just like – there's no internet, obviously. And I think to myself, I should figure out what the deal is with driver's ed in the public school system because, like, I need to do this now if I want to get my license when I turn 16. So I call, like, the front – I call the secretary for the Seattle Public School District, okay? And – like I look it up in the phone book, like the gray pages, like school district, Seattle
so
Public.
This is so nuts.
I call and I go, I want to take driver's ed. What do I do? And she's like, oh, actually, I don't know if she transfers me or if she just knew. But what it came down to was all of the driver's ed classes in the Seattle Public School District had already started except one of them. It was at Ingram High School and it started that day. And this was the last round of classes where it was $105. The new price was going to be $300-something.
Holy crap.
So I was like, man, I got to get in that class.
And I can't afford not to take this class, Mom.
Because I knew there was no way my parents were going to pay $300. I was going to be hosed. So I was like, I got to get into this driver's ed class, which starts in like 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
At Ingram High School. And, you know, of course, it was like full. And there were all, I don't know. I somehow bamboozled my way into this driver's ed class. And so anyway, I did get my – I had the proper credentials so that I was able to get my license on the day that I turned 16.
Wow.
How long was that class? Because that was the other thing. I had an older brother, and he was basically like, go get a private – you know, mom and dad will pay for it. They paid for his because the private one, they just churn and burn you through that thing.
Yeah.
It's like a four-week course or something. It's like nothing. But if you take a class, it's like a quarter or whatever.
Yeah, and we even did that. We did that crazy thing where – there were simulators, but the simulator was you sit. So part of it was classroom where you would take the, you know, you'd learn about the rules of the road. And then at Ingram at the time, or maybe we went somewhere else for this, I can't remember. We would, before they would let us in a car, we would go in this room that had little cockpits, steering wheel and other things, and you would watch a movie was projected on the front of the room.
Dude, that was Pole Position.
It was
you were playing pole position.
It was Pizza and Pipes. I was playing Spy Hunter.
Spy Hunter was so great. I forgot about Spy Hunter.
Whenever somebody in front of me, if their car just lets out a tremendous rattle of white smoke, I'm like, oh, you Spy Hunter'd me.
Watch out for the oil that
you
always comes
spun
next.
Out.
Yeah. Hey, let's do this. We got to take a quick break here. Let's do that, and then when we come back, maybe we can decide if I should get into the Toyota Cressida station wagon that a guy named Norm Stiley burned me on, or if we should just keep rolling with car numero uno, the Honda Civic, which had, as I've talked about on the show a lot, exactly two cassette tapes in it, REM Green and Cypress Hill Black Sunday, and I listened to those pretty much from 16 to 18. Anyway, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with more TBTL Summer Spectacular in a moment. Oh, man.
I've been listening to so much REM lately.
Really?
Yes. It has a combination of two things. I got that cassette player recently, so I can go back and listen to all my old cassettes. And plus, there's that Scott Aukerman show, Are You Talking REM Re-Me?
Right.
Which is like, it's him and Adam Scott.
Yeah.
And they did a whole thing about U2 where they broke down the entire discography, and then they moved on to REM. So I've been listening to that show, then listening to the albums.
Did you ever, Camaro, did you listen to REM up in Lake Stevens, or was that like city music?
No, it was fine. It was all over MTV at some point, obviously, when Losing My Religion came out and all that stuff. Not my scene.
Yeah.
Really wasn't. I was more into something harsher at that point. I'd be into, like, you know, we've rode down about AC/DC a few times.
Sure,
the
yeah.
Razor's Edge.
Right, right. Mistress for Christmas, your favorite song in the world, if I understand it correctly. Did you find REM to be, like, too urban?
It just came off whiny to me. That's the problem.
Like, I like REM, but it is just like the whitest, whiniest shit. And I like it, but like, man.
Did I tell you, I know at some point I've talked about this. One time I was having a picnic in Brooklyn and Michael Stipe was sitting by us. I think it was me and Vanessa. And I was like, that's Michael Stipe, but he looks pretty yoked.
Really?
And I was like, that's like if Michael Stipe got buff. What's going on? And
he's like Jeff Bezos now when you see him, right?
I made this joke on Wait Wait, and they probably cut it out as they should have. But Jeff Bezos is looking more and more like he should live inside an island shaped like a human skull.
Yeah.
Like he's getting super villainy.
Yes.
Like
so totally.
He looks like Mr. Bigglesworth.
All of these like huge like rich guys who have so much control, like it really feels like we're living in a comic book. Like like a Batman-esque comic book.
And his physical appearance, you know, because he's like his hair was going away, so he finally got the memo to shave. Then he was, you know, he was just like a pleasantly, he wasn't even plump. He was just like a normal guy, but then he decided probably, you know, he's probably paleo and CrossFitting.
Like, saw
they got to master every part of their universe.
I saw an old episode of Northwest Afternoon, and they had him when he was first starting Amazon that show. And I forget, wasn't it Amazon specifically sold like
books?
It was, but he was even like, they were just starting to expand, and he was doing a whole infomercial kind of thing on Northwest Afternoon, and it's not even the same human being. You would be shocked.
So,
like a comb over.
Why wouldn't I just go to a bookstore? I don't understand. Why would
and
I want to have
Reinhardt, Cindy Reinhardt firing in hot with the soaps report? The idea that Jeff Bezos, who's arguably one of the most powerful men on planet Earth now, once shared a dingy stage with Cindy Reinhardt. God bless. Peace
local
and love.
Local TV.
Everybody started somewhere, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, and this is the part of the show where I repeat my go-to Amazon story, which is when I was at the UW, I was buddies with this guy in a drama class, and I was just starting to, I think, maybe work at Metro Traffic. I was starting to get on the air on AM 770. KNWX,
ooh,
the all news station. And so I thought I was a pretty big deal down at the Cracker Factory. And which also, by the way, is the nickname for REM. And I remember
that
this
came out right before Reveal, right?
Yeah. This guy said, he got a job, you know, at this. He's like, yeah, it's like a place we're trying to sell books on the internet. And, you know, it's like employee number 10 or something.
Yeah.
He was like, I think he might have even just been answering phones.
They're paying me with stock options.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's going nowhere.
It may have literally still been at Bezos' house at that point. I mean, some crazy shit, right? And I was just like, I just remember thinking, you poor fool, you'll never be as cool as I am. Do you even understand that I do traffic every 10 minutes on the 7s on KNWX? Like, do you even get who you're talking to right now?
Those S-curves aren't going to report on themselves.
And then, like, you know, 10 years later or something, I see him on a ferry. I'm going out to see my parents. And I'm like, how's it going, man? He's like, great. I go, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, I'm with my parents. We're going out to look at a place out in Bainbridge. I was like, don't they live in California? He goes, yeah, I'm getting them a place out here. He was like buying his parents a second home on Bainbridge.
Thinking about buying the whole island.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And reshaping it into the form of a human skull. Jeff Bezos is going to live here. Anyway, I feel like now, okay, we're at a roughly the 19-minute mark on this. And in case you didn't catch our last round of these special holiday, or you could just say vacation-related programming, we're going to go about roughly a half hour a day. And Andrew, I think this was maybe your idea, but it was a good one, was instead of just playing tape, like instead of playing old shows, which everybody who listens has access to, and then doing an intro of 20 minutes, a new intro, we might as well just do new standalone shows, which granted are a little shorter, but, we figure it's probably better than the alternative.
That's what I figure. And if you I know a lot of people listen to the show. It's kind of almost like background noise. It's just something like a companion for you for, like, you know, the 90 minutes we usually go. And if you're bummed that it's only like about a half hour these couple of weeks, I would recommend listening more than once because there's a lot of good. I mean, there's a lot of layers going on here. I told a hilarious REM joke a little bit ago. You probably already forgot about it, but go back, relive that again, and just make sure that you keep on hitting that download button on your app.
If you listen to the show twice, it is an hour long.
That's right.
You just have to listen two times.
Yep. It would be just like you were listening to your tapes in your car. If they would just keep replaying it, it kind of goes along with the theme,
exactly.
I think, of the show, right?
Yeah.
This comes up pretty frequently on the program, but I feel like I remember listening to those tapes and never being like, oh, I got to skip to the next song. Just being like, yeah, this is great. This is the ninth cut on Black Sunday, and I'm into it. Yeah. Like, my attention span is so destroyed at this point. There is a short list of albums that I can listen to front to back anymore.
But also keep in mind, I'm sure, what year Honda or whatever that was, there was no Seek on the cassette.
Do you remember that? I mean, that was a game changer. When my parents got a car, and suddenly you could fast forward an entire song on tape, and it just knew.
It would stop the gaps.
It fucking knew.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, this stereo did not have that option. I also remember...
So that's why. That's why you just let it go.
I also remember thinking, like, yeah, this system's kind of booming. I think it was stock. Like, if I went back and listened to that now, I'm sure my phone... has better audio.
Totally.
Like, I bet if you put my phone in a water glass on the dashboard of that Honda, it would sound better than the actual built-in stereo system of that 1980 Honda.
We'll maybe talk about this car later, but I had a Toyota Tercel, like a 1990 Toyota Tercel, and I owned this probably around 2003 or something. And I bought it, like, for $200 off of... That was one thing. The first three cars I bought myself, they were all... I paid less for them each time. My first one was $2,000 that I bought when I was 17. The next car I bought was $600. The next car I bought after college was $200. I bought it from a coworker, and it had this speaker that kept, like, I think only one speaker worked in the car, and it was the driver's side door speaker, and it would blitz out on me. And so much of my driving around Concord, New Hampshire, as you know, as a salaried, like, adult, I'm just pounding the door with my fist.
See, I would only do that for so long, but I would then take the door panel off and rework it.
Were you that guy, Camaro? Because everybody had the friend who kind of knew how to futz with stereos. Like, it was Seth Brolight in my friend group. And I remember Seth pulled a move. He was trying to help rewire my stereo, and he was trying to figure out if these two, if a wire was live, and he touched it to his tongue. I was just like, you have a death wish, bro? He was just like, his brain got how all that shit worked.
Yeah.
So it would be like, you'd basically be trying to trick Seth, hey, man, you want to come over and, like, you know, play some, like, dunk hoops or something? But then really it was like, I need to get him to help rewire the speaker and the passenger door.
Play dunk hoops.
Is that a video game? Or is that an actual, what you call basketball?
I'm sure it's
your
a
backyard
game that you just, you oh, it was, had a lowered hoop that you could dunk on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we used to do it at Pinehurst, actually, not far from your house. That Pinehurst used to have great dunk hoops. Seth, the Mummy, Vince Mackinich, Derek Lilliscar, Phil Scovern, a.k.a. the Pinto Pony, a.k.a. Scov Chunks. We would get the whole crew out there. Vince was the guy who was the, like, filmmaker of the crew. So
sure.
He had some big, you know, shoulder-mounted camera. He'd film everything, and then, like, he'd somehow use some kind of very early video editing software, and we'd have these, like, videos of us dunking with, like, music and
REM
stuff.
REM playing.
A lot of REM.
Soundtrack while you...
We thought it
night
was so
cool. Night swimming!
It's a sick jam on a 5-foot hoop.
So were you always fixing up your, like, car stereos? You knew how to do that?
I had two friends that were way into it. One, Newman, RIP, God rest his soul.
Man.
That guy was a master of car stereo situations. Absolutely, he could tell you how many ohms. I don't even know what an ohm is. He's like, don't get the Rockford Fosgate. It can't take the heat. It'll fry at some point. He knew all of this. He worked at a local place in Marysville.
That's awesome.
Like, it's called, like, Blair's or something, and they sold car stereos.
Yeah,
and then the other guy
was
Dykstra. And so between the two of them, absolutely, between the two of them, they knew everything about car stereos, but Newman did it the right way and Dykstra did it the cheap way.
Nothing changed.
Nothing changed
over the course of 20 years.
He would twist the wires together and get whatever tape he could and tape it while Jason would crimp it and have the, like, proper things that would, like, seal
it. The little plastic
and,
tips that you would slide
absolutely
over it.
Yeah. And so when Dykstra was driving and the bass would stop because, you know,
something
the tape
come
came
unwired,
Newman would give him hell about, like, should have crimped it, bro. We wouldn't be heading up to Green Mountain without bass right now.
You mean Dykstra, the guy who just tried to pull a pontoon boat over to Crescent Bar and couldn't get it out of Monroe because his RV wouldn't do it?
He will kill me. Kill me if he hears this shit.
That'll never. It'll never get. They don't get the internet in that part of Monroe, I think.
That's true.
Did you guys have a friend who had, like, just who had almost a, I don't know what you'd call it, but like a, like, an unhealthy relationship with trying to get more bass into their car?
Oh, yeah.
Like a ours was Josh Badger Newton. He kept upping his bazooka tubes,
yes,
to the point where it was, like, ludicrous to ride in the car with this thing.
Newman had an S10 that he, it had a single bench seat. It's an S10. It's a pickup, a little small Chevy pickup. He wanted bass so bad that he had this box behind the seat But in order to have the bass, you sacrificed a comfortable ride anywhere. So he was like way up, you know, the steering wheel was in his chest, and he had like he had to have like dinosaur arms to steer. But the Chronic sounded fantastic. So it was
ours was Josh was really into PM Dawn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's badass.
We drive around his Dodge Daytona with just a massive, massive bazooka tube in the back and just listen to Set of Bliss on Memory. Set Adrift on Memory, Bliss of You.
I believe what Newman had was two tens. Because that was the other thing. They all had this.
What does that mean?
I had a 12, man.
What does the 10 refer to?
It's two 10-inch subwoofer speakers mounted in a box. So one behind the driver's seat, one behind the passenger seat was the way he had it set up. And, you know, they have, like, air ports on the sides of the box to, you know, whatever, to get the air pushing and get the bass sounding. And then you mono it out. And
so you already know way more about this stuff than we do.
So, of course, Dykstra had to outdo him. But he, again, he has his own means of creating a box. And so in his truck, he got a giant 12, and he didn't have a box, so he just took a garbage can. Like, sawed it in half. And
like
cut
a
out
metal garbage can?
No, like
plastic?
A plastic Rubbermaid garbage can, I think. Sawed it in half, cut the bottom out, and mounted the speaker.
How'd it sound?
He had that in between the seats. So again, it was like a bench seat. So if you rode with him, you had this garbage can.
Wait,
upside
it was
down with a speaker in the
on
middle.
The seat,
yeah,
on
like,
the bench seat.
Like in between the seat, like at least, you know, where you'd have a stick shift or something.
Yeah.
So part of the seat and part of that, my understanding is that's how it was set
how
up.
How did it sound?
Not bad. I mean, you know what I mean? There's thick bass, heavy bass. It did the job.
I didn't really have anybody who was going for bass, but my friend Tony had a friend named Nathan. And I knew Nathan well, but mostly knew him through Tony.
But you still consider him Tony's friend.
What happened? Well, Nathan didn't live near me. My friend Tony and I grew up together up until a certain age, and then Tony moved to Canton, Ohio to live with his mom. And he had a much more kind of city life.
He didn't move to Canton because he was being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Not yet. But he thought, like, you know what, if I put myself there,
it's about showing up.
Yeah. Also, hates football. So he had this friend, Nathan, in Canton, and I would see him a lot. But Nathan was one of those guys, he's like a guitarist, so he's always messing around with amps and stuff. But he did this thing, and I don't know if I ever even heard him, but he was always making speakers out of literal cardboard boxes.
Yes.
Like, anytime you saw a cardboard box, you'd grab it. And then I think I saw his car before. I don't think I ever drove in it. And, like, he would just have the entire back seat filled with all these tiny mini little speakers that he made out of cardboard boxes. And
I don't know about
his
that.
Room.
I've never heard anything like that.
What did you do with the cardboard box?
No, I was actually thinking more of, like, a press board or whatever.
Literally, like, shoe boxes and shit. He would tape them all up and just, like, and anytime he could just get his hands on a tiny little speaker, he would make a new speaker out of it.
Wow.
It seems like that would, if it was cardboard, it wouldn't, I don't know, perform as well as something made out, like you said, like that particle board or whatever.
Yeah, it's always particle board, and then someone, if they were really fancy, would get like a nice like velour over the particle board with the color of whatever your interior is.
Well, that's a makeout car now.
Yeah.
Then the upgrade was you had a Discman.
Oh my
in
God.
Your car, was just a nightmare.
I don't care
how much. What was the anti-skip
buffering
technology?
Yeah.
Buffering or whatever. Yeah. I don't care what kind of supposed sorcery was going to use to not skip.
Oh, no,
fuck
this
that.
Has an 8x buffer. This buffers 8x, man.
Nope.
It's not going to skip at all.
Does not.
Anti-shock system.
That's
TM.
It.
TM it would have. It's a proprietary deal that Panasonic was pushing, I think.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right. Well, on that note, we've got to wrap up this edition of Car Stereo Talk.
Can we go out with music? And do you have the ability to play us out with some PM Dawn, maybe?
Oh,
or,
man.
Anything else that you guys find appropriate?
I always find PM Dawn. Didn't this guy pass away?
Oh, no.
Too, by the way?
I don't know.
The main dude. All right, let's do that. Let's go out with a little... Oh, God. Camaro doesn't have headphones, but just look into my eyes and just read the beauty, the innocence of a child as presented in the song Set Adrift on Memory Bliss.
Look at the hairs on my arms stand
goosebumps,
up.
Goosebumps. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with another edition of the TBTL Summer Special. Until then, enjoy your Monday. Go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. Baby, you send me out. Baby, you send me out. Set adrift on memory blessing. The camera pans, a cocktail glass. Behind the blinds of plastic plants, they find a lady with a fat diamond ring. And then you know I can't remember a damn thing. I think it's one of those deja vu things, or a dream that's trying to tell me something. But will I ever stop thinking about it? I don't know, I doubt it. Subterranean by design, I wonder what I would find if I met you. I let my eyes caress you, would you let me the daughter of which is Princess who? Often wonder what makes her work. I guess I'll leave those questions to the experts, assuming that there are some out there that are probably alone, solitaire. I can remember when I caught up with a pastime intimate friend. She said, but you're probably gonna say I look lovely, but you probably don't think nothing of me. She was right though, I can't lie. She's just one of those corners in my mind, so I'll just put her right back with the rest. That's the way it goes, I guess. Baby, you send me out. Baby, you send me out. Set adrift on memory bliss of you. Power out.